This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Membership at kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Aladdin Theater, presenting Alligator Records rhythm and blues artist Tommy Castro and the Painkillers, 8 p.m. Thursday, March 14th. Tickets and information for Tommy Castro and the Painkillers at the Aladdin box office and Aladdin-Theater.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Catholic Church appoints a new pope, Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Argentina.
The Portland City Council unanimously votes to give workers sick leave.
And TriMet releases its 2014 budget, which will not include cuts.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 13th, 2013. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Nia Lewis. The Portland City Council passed a measure today that requires employers to provide sick leave to their employees in the city of Portland. The measure requires private employers to give employees up to 40 hours a year of sick leave as long as the employees work at least 240 hours a year. This amounts to allowing employees to earn 1 hour of sick leave per 30 hours of work. For employees of six or more people, paid sick leave is required, whereas employers with fewer employees can choose unpaid time off as an alternative. Today's vote was unanimous, and all of the commissioners gave statements in support of the measure when they cast their votes. Here are excerpts of the statements given by Commissioner Saltzman, Novick, and Fritz.
I have heard many compelling testimonials about the need for a paid and protected sick leave policy. But the reason I'm supporting this policy is really quite simple. No person should have to choose between their job and taking care of their sick child. No domestic violence victim should have to wait to seek services that may save her life because they cannot afford to take time off from work. These in and of themselves are absolutely compelling reasons for me to support this policy. And I would also say, as my colleagues have echoed, we hope the state will act. As Senator Steiner Hayward said, there's no reason somebody working in Medford should not benefit from the same paid sick leave policy that we have here in Portland. And I hope our action today will help stir Salem to act something on a statewide basis. And just on a personal note, having been on this council in my 15th year, in looking back, I think this vote will be one of the ones that I will really recognize. This one made a difference. This one is going to help people climb up the ladder. This one really is going to help close the gap between rich and poor. And it's going to lift the standard of living for many people right now who are struggling to make ends meet every day. So this is something that I'm going to look back and recognize. This vote, this law, this ordinance really improve people's lives. And that's what we're all up here to do. I'm pleased to vote aye.
A number of entities have made cases for exceptions to this law. And some of those were sympathetic cases. But we had a couple of problems with going down that road. One is that there is no exception to the idea that we don't want sick people going to work and infecting their coworkers and customers. The other is that once you start going down the road of exceptions, every exception you grant, 10 people will rise up and say that they deserve an exception too. To me, this is a matter of whether we are going to live in a civilized society, and a society in which 40% of people don't have earned sick leave is not a civilized society. I'm proud to vote aye.
We need to care for each other. This is a regulation that seeks to do that. I'm hopeful that the state will pass as good or better regulation statewide as we're hearing, passing here today. So I encourage everybody, however you feel about this, contact your state representative and urge support for House Bill 3390 and also for Senate Bill 801. Because I think we all agree it would be simpler, it would be better. Senator Steiner Haywood said to me when I visited and lobbied on Friday morning, right after we had had the hearing yesterday, last week on Thursday, she said, it's not fair for workers in Portland to have a benefit that workers in Medford do not. And I think that that is true, and that the more workers nationally that get covered by earned sick leave, most countries already have this. So that's why I believe this is a precedent that I'm proud to participate in.
That was Portland Commissioner Amanda Fritz. Before her, you heard Commissioner Saltzman and Novick all speaking in favor of a measure that passed today requiring employers in Portland to provide paid sick leave to employees.
Prosecutors in the case of the Portland Christmas tree bombing plotter have urged a federal judge to uphold the guilty ruling in the case. Mohammed Mohammed was convicted in January of plotting to blow up Portland's Christmas tree lighting ceremony in 2010. His lawyers argue that he was entrapped by undercover agents who urged the 18-year-old to engage in violence. After a jury found him guilty, Mohammed's lawyer filed an appeal asking a judge to dismiss the case or to hold a retrial, saying the court's ruling was a serious miscarriage of justice. The two key witnesses in the trial, two undercover FBI agents, were never identified, which defense attorneys say hindered their ability to cross-examine the witnesses. Also, a large amount of evidence was not allowed to be introduced to the jury, including controversial and racist statements made by the undercover agents. This week, federal prosecutors responded to that appeal, urging the judge to uphold the ruling. Mohammed is scheduled to be sentenced in May and could receive a sentence of life in prison.
The Service Employees International Union held an informational picket at the State Office Building in Portland over the lunch hour today. Contracts for many types of public sector workers expire at the end of June, and accountability for the financial services industry plays high on their list of demands. KBOO News reporter Robin Ryan attended the informational picket and spoke with a member of the union for more details.
So we are state workers that are bargaining a contract right now with the state for our current employment that will expire on June 30th. And we're trying to get a fair deal for state workers and not have cuts to vital state services to Oregonians that state workers provide.
And can I get your name?
My name is Hillary Booth. I'm the vice chair of SEIU Local 219.
I understand that part of the bargaining topics is holding the banks accountable. Can you shed any light for me on that?
Well, part of our opening proposal to the state was asking them to go after banks specifically that operated illegally and cost the state loss in revenue for different things like bonds or other measures where we had made investments that were affected by the different corruptions from banks internationally. We want the state of Oregon, number one, to go after those banks and get that money back, and number two, to stop doing business with them because they cheated us.
When you say us, you mean the members of the union, or?
They cheated all Oregonians out of tax revenues that would help provide services that are vital to the sustainment of our communities.
So other sticking points that you feel are going to be resisted?
Well, we're all concerned that they're going to come down and try and change the rules around our retirement benefits, and we're very nervous that the state is going to go back on some deals that might have been already put forth for retired state workers. So we're trying to hold the line on that and pay attention to the legislature and make sure that bills aren't going to be passing that are going to affect retired and current state workers negatively.
I understand you guys have planned actions between now and June 30th. Can you tell me what to expect when next?
Well, right now, March 12th and 13th, we're doing statewide actions on both days, coordinated at different work sites to show solidarity for our bargaining team as we proceed. We'll be having a rally in May for Allstate workers in Salem, and we're expecting a big turnout, so that's going to be our next big showing of support during our contract negotiations.
Care to reveal any part of your hand for May Day activities?
Well, this local has participated in the celebration of May Day before here at the Portland State Office Building, but I don't know yet if we're going to be doing a statewide day of action on May 1st.
Okay, well, Hillary, thanks for your time. Good luck. I'll be following what happens.
Great. Thanks for coming out.
The Portland Regional Transit Agency TriMet released its annual budget today and is projecting a $28 million surplus. But TriMet representatives warn that the demands of the workers' union could change that forecast. TriMet fares are currently the highest in the nation after implementing the largest fare increase in TriMet history last year. But TriMet officials blame the health care provided to workers as the reason for recent cost overruns. The budget was released just after documents were released to the press, showing that TriMet executives gave themselves raises at the same time that they were claiming in negotiations with the union that they had put in place a 3-year freeze on executive pay raises. For more, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Bruce Hansen, the president of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local Branch in Portland.
I wonder if you can first comment on the budget that was released today by TriMet that says there will not be fare increases or service cuts this year as long as the arbitration award holds with the union. What do they mean by that?
Their budget actually still concerns me a little bit. They're stating that there's no fare increases, but yet they did the fare system migration back in 2011 that talked about fare increases, and they're actually at where they wanted to be all at one. They did that all in one step. So their increase has already been there. They've just already accomplished that.
So let's talk more about the executive raises at TriMet. They had said during the contract negotiations with your union that they had a 3.5-year freeze on raises for executives. Apparently that's not the case?
Would be apparently so. Since 2009, I think that you can show increases to wages and promotions. And then they continue to hire six-figure executives and to build their force back up.
And do you feel that that is negotiating in bad faith with the union?
I think, once again, it shows that not only do they try to deceive the union itself, but deceiving the public in aspects of trying to hide their raises in what they call a contingency fund.
And what about the issue of safety? Last month there was a TriMet Max train that had a door jammed open at a high speed. Can you talk about the cuts in the maintenance that have been done at TriMet?
Yeah, so our maintenance department has been what we call depleted on their maintenance abilities because of the budget cuts and the reallocations of funds. Yes, we receive federal monies to build a train track and receive trains. We don't receive the federal funds that operate that and maintain it.
So in order for TriMet to address safety concerns, they are going to run the trains slower?
Correct.
What about the claim that it's the health care costs of the workers that are inflating the fares?
My question would be pertaining to that, to TriMet, and what other options have they looked at as options in reducing that cost?
What's the current status of the contract?
Our contract negotiations are pending a Multnomah County's judge decisions whether we are able to hold negotiations in a public forum. We should hear something by end of week is what we're hearing.
Well, we will continue to follow this story from the Amalgamated Transit Union's side and hearing from TriMet representatives who are going to court over the contract negotiations. I wonder if there's anything that you'd like to add or if you are asking for any support from listeners.
We're definitely asking for the support of the listeners. You know, our operators, our mechanics, our bus drivers, you know, we're out there doing the service for them as well. and we will continue to do that service to the best of our ability, and we would like them to know that as well.
Well, thank you so much. Again, I've been speaking with Bruce Hansen, who is the president of the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 757 here in Portland, representing workers for TriMet. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Yesterday, Port of Seattle commissioners voted for a sevenfold pay raise, increasing their salaries to $42,000 a year. Current commissioners earn $6,000 a year and work about half-time. The five-member commission oversees the SeaTac Airport and port, cruise ship, and cargo terminal operations. President of the commission, Tom Albro, proposed the pay increase as a way of making the job more attractive to applicants. Albro has said he will decline his raise if he is reelected. The vote brings commission salaries up to the level state lawmakers are paid. The raise won't take effect until after the next election.
The Oregon Senate approved a bill today that would ban smoking in a vehicle on Oregon roads when anyone under 18 is present. Under the bill, police officers could not pull drivers over for the offense. However, if drivers were stopped for other infractions, they could face fines up to $250 for the first offense and $500 for subsequent offenses. Supporters of the bill cite child safety and the risks of secondhand smoke to justify the new regulations. Critics say the bill is an example of so-called nanny state regulations. Despite the criticism, the measure passed 19-10 and now goes on to the House.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio News after this newscast, followed by Right to Survive Radio at 6. Right to Survive Radio confronts the housing crisis and organizes housing activists to address systemic inequalities. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is cloudy early on, with showers in the afternoon. Chance of rain is 60%.
It is 5:19. Time now for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
When it comes to pursuing their prey, sharks are master maneuverers. Loan sharks, that is. These days, this usurious species goes by the less threatening name of payday lenders. But they are no less voracious, targeting folks in rough financial straits and luring them with easy money come-ons. With lethal interest rates of more than 700%, automatic renewal clauses, and other razor-sharp gotchas, a $500 payday loan can sink a hapless borrower thousands of dollars into debt. That's why states have been restricting the sharks' interest rate gouging and entrapment techniques. But with a flip of their tails, many payday lenders are simply swimming around state laws by operating online and offshore from such regulatory safe harbors as the Bahamas, the Isle of Man, and Malta. From there, sharks can make loans, then begin devouring their borrowers' bank accounts, even in states that ban such loans. How can shady operators pull off billions of dollars worth of these devious and maybe illegal transactions each year? With inside help from such pillars of the financial establishment as Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. Of course, these upstanding corporate citizens don't dirty their hands or reputations by making these predatory loans, but they willingly allow offshore sharks to tap directly into the borrower's checking accounts and withdraw unconscionable interest payments electronically and mercilessly. There's a four-letter F word for what the banks are doing to their own depositors: fees. Automatic withdrawals by the sharks can cause a tsunami of overdrafts in a borrower's bank account, and banks happily collect fat fees for every overdraft. This is Jim Hightower saying, for more information and action, go to responsiblelending.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
An 11-year-old boy has pleaded guilty at first-degree robbery in Oregon's juvenile court. Police arrested the boy on December 8th for allegedly attempting to rob and carjack a woman in southeast Portland church parking lot with a .22 caliber handgun. According to police reports, the boy and his 7-year-old accomplice approached Portland resident Amy Garrett while she was sitting in her truck in the parking lot of the Four Square Church on the 16,000 block of Southeast Alder Street. When Garrett refused to give the boys her truck, phone, and money, they threatened to shoot her. She drove away unharmed and called the police, who then arrested the older boy. In exchange for the guilty plea, Multnomah County Juvenile Court Judge Paula Kircher dismissed additional charges of second-degree robbery and unlawful possession of a firearm. According to Portland police, the handgun belonged to the boy's father, Joseph D. Charlton. Charlton now faces a federal charge for being a felon in possession of a firearm. The attempted carjacking occurred during the same week of a gunman opening fire on shoppers at the Clackamas Town Center, and second gunman killed more than a dozen people at a Connecticut elementary school. In the months since, the national debate on gun reform has become increasingly polarized as President Obama proposes sweeping changes to gun control policies, individual states rethink their gun control laws, and the National Rifle Association vows to lobby against anti-gun legislation of any kind. According to current Oregon law, minors are not permitted to possess handguns under any circumstances. They are, however, permitted to possess firearms as long as they have parental or guardian consent and haven't been previously charged with a felony or misdemeanor.
Journey, the wolf officially known as OR7, is confirmed to have crossed back into Oregon on his more than 3,000-mile trek through the state and the state of California. In 2011, Journey was the first wolf confirmed west of the Cascades since 1947, after they were believed eradicated by state-sponsored bounties. Wolves are now protected by federal and state endangered species acts.
Researchers from Oregon State University report that the Earth's temperature is warmer than it has been 90% of the past 11,000 years. According to an OSU study that reconstructed the first complete history of the Earth's global average surface temperature, the study's lead author, Sean Marcotte, Ph.D. of OSU's College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Sciences, says that it combines data from 73 sites all over the world and gives a clear sense of the Earth's global temperature history. The pattern shows that the Earth's temperature has risen sharply over the past 200 years, reversing a cooling trend for the previous 5,000 years. The larger changes in temperatures are taking place in the Northern Hemisphere in areas of larger human populations. Marcotte says that the increase in CO2 through increased emissions from human activities has been significant and is the only variable that can best explain the rapid increase in global temperatures. Most alarming in the study is a projection that by the year 2100, temperatures can raise as much as an additional 11.5 degrees, depending on carbon emissions.
The British energy titan EDF yielded to the pressure of an online petition today. The signature campaign demanded that the company drop its $7.5 million lawsuit against protesters who closed down a West Burton power plant in Nottinghamshire for a week last October. The petition was started on change.org by the parent of an activist within the group No Dash for Gash. So far, the petition has reached 64,000 signatures.
A group of 30 internet rights organizations sent a letter this week to members of Congress demanding they vote no on the so-called cybersecurity bill known as CISPA. Throughout this week, Congress is holding three different hearings about CISPA and computer and network security. In the coalition letter, groups including Mozilla, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and the American Library Association called on Congress to oppose CISPA because of privacy and civil liberty concerns. The bill would allow the transfer of vast quantities of data, including sensitive information like internet records or emails, to any government agency, including the military. Once in government hands, this information can be used for undefined national security purposes unrelated to cybersecurity. CISPA may advance in the House at any time. Today's hearing focused on the Department of Homeland Security's role in cybersecurity. The second hearing this week will touch on computer crime laws, including increasing mandatory sentences like the ones which targeted internet activist Aaron Swartz and led, according to his friends and family, to his suicide. There is a talk of increasing the penalties of these laws every year a cybersecurity bill is introduced.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, six soldiers were killed today in Afghanistan. Army Captain Andrew Peterson Keel of Connecticut was killed by an Afghani police officer, and five NATO soldiers were killed in a helicopter crash. NATO has released very little information about the crash, including what may have caused it. Also on Tuesday, seven civilians were killed in two separate incidents in Helmand province, a southern province in Afghanistan. One woman and five men were killed by a roadside bomb, and two people were injured, according to District Governor Shah Mahmood.
And now the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, March 13, 2013. Israeli troops continue to arrest Palestinians from occupied West Bank and army tanks invade parts of the Gaza Strip. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. The Palestinian Journalists Union released a statement on Wednesday condemning the killing of online journalist and blogger Mohammed Attiti, demanding international investigation into his death. Attiti was killed by Israeli gunfire in the southern West Bank city of Hebron on Tuesday during clashes between local youth and Israeli forces. According to medical sources, Attiti was killed after being hit with internationally banned dum-dum bullets fired by Israeli troops. Eight others were injured in Tuesday's clashes. In the nearby city of Bethlehem on Wednesday, Israeli soldiers detained a Palestinian child, 14 years old, after claiming that she hurled stones at the Jeep west of Bethlehem City. The child was released later on. Following the kidnapping of the child, the Palestinian District Coordination Office reportedly contacted the Israeli side, demanding the army to release the child. The army then let the child go. In occupied East Jerusalem, Israeli soldiers searched and ransacked on Wednesday morning the house of Mahfouz Abu Turk, a local journalist, and kidnapped his 22-year-old son. Moreover, soldiers handed Abu Turk and his wife orders for questioning to be held at a military base near Jerusalem. In the Gaza Strip today, several armored Israeli military vehicles invaded on Wednesday morning an area east of Khan Yunis city in the southern part of the Gaza Strip and bulldozed farmlands and property. Eyewitnesses said that eight Israeli military bulldozers and armored vehicles stationed at the Kisufim military base across the borders advanced dozens of meters into Palestinian lands in Al-Farahin area in Abasan Al-Kubra east of Khan Yunis, bulldozed structures and uprooted farmlands. The army recently carried out numerous limited invasions targeting areas close to the border fence. On Monday morning, March 11, 2013, a number of armored Israeli military vehicles carried out a limited invasion into area east of Johar Ad-Dik area south of Gaza City. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, March 13th news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, Hassan Badnoura.
White smoke billowed from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel today, signaling that the Catholic Church has a new leader. The Papal Conclave chose a cardinal from Argentina as the new pope. The new pope, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, will be called Francis I, the 266th pontiff of the Roman Catholic Church. Pope Francis is the first South American, the first Jesuit, and the first non-European leader of the church in more than 1,200 years. The new pope addressed a cheering crowd of thousands from the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica. Last month, Francis's predecessor, Pope Benedict, became the first pope in nearly 600 years to resign. Francis was born in Buenos Aires to Italian immigrant parents and is well known as a champion for the poor and a critic of unregulated free market economies in his native Argentina. The pope maintains a somewhat liberal view of contraception, conceding that it may be used to stop the spread of disease. However, Francis has a conservative record with respect to homosexuality. He opposed legislation introduced in 2010 by the Argentine government to allow same-sex marriage and called the bill a machination of the father of lies that seeks to confuse and deceive the children of God.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jemai Cherry, Robin Ryan, Quinn Reed, and Aaron Bernard. The producer is Jennifer Kemp. Our engineer extraordinaire is Kurt Lauer. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are their phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K264AA Corvallis 100.7 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Nia Lewis.
And I'm Brian.